Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John and Joe, another episode ready to go. They're gonna talk about the good and the trash and anything in between. Cherishing make-believe, get ready for Halloween. It's the horror show. I know you miss those guys. Tune in and find out what's on their list tonight. They butcher and dissect, take apart and mutilate. Listen to your two favorite brainiacs communicate. It's the horror show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horror Show. Show dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not-so-favorite horror movies and other horror-related events. I'm Sean.
I'm Joe.
Hello, Joe.
What's going on?
Oh, nothing. Coming off of an amazing live show for House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes, lots of fun.
I cannot recommend enough going over to patreon.com/IHateHorror and checking that out. The replay's up there. It is so good. It was so fun. The audio on Paul is a fuck up. Might be. But in my defense, everything we were looking at showed Paul, like, you could hear Paul through the machine. It was a little technical snafu I had in the background.
Figure out. What caused it?
Yeah, it's this thing called mix minus, because technically he was on this fourth input that acts as a computer input, and you could, anyway, it's a whole thing. It basically prevents things from playing, but looping, it doesn't matter. But next time, we will have it good to go. Next time, we'll have it good to go.
Yeah, it was great being in person.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was really fun. Different energy. When you got Definitely. Three guys crammed on a couch. Different vibes. Hey, happy 350th episode.
Is that today? That's today's?
Today, we are celebrating by watching Chud.
Nice.
350 episodes of The Horror Show.
Wow.
You can almost listen to one episode a day for an entire year. If you do that.
Please don't do that.
I don't want to know. About it. Yeah. don't message me.
You're
about
put
it
on a list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll call the police. So I tried looking up some TV shows that had at least 350 episodes to see what their 350th episode was. Turns out, I thought it was going to be a short list. But fucking every show on earth has 350 episodes. It's fucking insane. It's not a milestone in television. Okay. It's fucking crazy. South Park, surprisingly, not 350 episodes.
They haven't reached 350?
No, because on their later seasons, they started doing like only 8 episodes a season.
Damn. So they've been on almost 30 years then.
Yeah, I know. It's they're at 325. They're at 325.
Wow. Damn.
Let's see. So I found a lot. There was a ton. Bonanza. Season 11, episode 17 was their 350th episode. It was called The Trouble with Amy. I turned it on to be like, I'll watch some of it to talk about it. Guys, this fucking show. I can't believe this show was on as long as it was.
Stop it. Bonanza.
No, Joe.
I watch Bonanza every day. Every day on TV.
I didn't see a fucking single smile on that show once, which might make it the most realistic Western of all time. Because, like, no one's fucking smile. Life was fucking miserable, but I don't want to watch that.
That's actually so fun, dude. There's so many episodes of just people walking in the stores and being upset about the prices, and there's no humorous break. It's just actually people upset about how much they have to pay for things.
No wonder our parents are fucking miserable. Like, that's what they had to fucking do. They were watching people being miserable on TV. That's it. That was their entertainment. They were like, sit down and have a great night, watch these people fucking just cry and mope. And then the lawmen that they have to deal with are just like, I don't give a fuck. The guy that this woman was talking to and, like, upset, she was upset, his face, he looked like he didn't even want to be on the show, let alone in the Wild West. He looked exhausted. So, yeah, there's that. Up All Night, the USA show.
When that Gilbert Gottfried posted? Gilbert
Gottfried did. Yeah, with all of our favorite childhood movies. They had a lot of episodes. Season 4 in 1992, episode 60. They did Cemetery High and Nightmare on Elm Street. It's a good night.
Okay.
I don't know what the fuck Cemetery High is.
Me neither. Sounds good. Sounds great, actually.
I know. Eat True Hollywood Story. Remember that movie?
Is that still on?
I don't think so. Season 9, episode 39, Jack Nicholson, baby.
All right.
It's a classic.
Dude, pretending you have that many interesting stories for that long of 350 different people.
Dude, come on. Look, it was nuts.
You believe Liz?
Now, this one really stood out, and it was a skit that I only remembered after reading it and was like, holy shit. SNL 350th episode was October 23rd, 1993. John Malkovich, the host. Sounds like a thrilling
comedic genius, John Malkovich.
Performance by Billy Joel. Ugh. He performed The River of Dreams.
Yeah, of course he did. Did that. My mom played that album to the ground when it came out.
That's so funny.
Awful.
And then another song called All About Soul, which was written by a white guy named Billy Joel. But that's fine. The guy's going to tell you all about soul. Assuming that's what the song is about. Who the fuck knows? Jan Hooks appears during a sketch. Now, this was the sketch that I was talking about. They did Of Mice and Men. And Chris Farley was Lenny.
Okay.
Joe, the skit is so fucking funny. And the picture of... I'll pull up the picture of Chris Farley as Lenny. I could not find a video of this episode. But... So he plays Lenny. And Malkovich plays... What's the other guy's name?
George.
Yeah. And... What happens in the skit is, sorry, I'm trying to pull up this picture.
Wasn't Malkovich in the movie of Mice and Men?
Oh, was he? Maybe that had to be why they did it, because the only show that casually brings up Of Mice and Men is us. So SNL's not being like, remember Of Mice and Men? Like, it had to be because he was in it.
Yeah, wait, what year was this?
This was in 93.
Okay, he was in Of Mice and Men in 92.
Okay, so that's why.
He was fucking Lenny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gary Sinise was George.
Well, if you'll see in this picture of Farley, all the bunnies on the ground. So the skit is Farley is Lenny, and he starts doing the rabbit thing and just starts like breaking all of their fucking necks. And Malkovich is like, what are you fucking doing? And then Lenny starts... going around killing people until he's killed everyone in the world. Just snapping everyone's neck on the farm. That's the sketch. 1993 was a wild year.
Dude, SNL during that time period was its hippest, right? Like that was the most appealing it was to the
still edgy. Yeah, still Sand, edgy.
Yeah, you had Sandler, you had Farley, you had Myers, you know, you had all the big hitters. So that makes it even funnier to have John Malkovich and Billy Joel as the musical acts, you know? Like at that time they were having like Nirvana and Soundgarden and like all the hip acts. Billy Joel and John Malkovich. Can't wait to tune into that one.
Malkovich is just playing a role he played earlier.
It's 92, 93. It's pre-Con Air. It's pre-being John Malkovich. Like, give a shit about John Malkovich in 92.
Mr. Rogers, 350th episode. Marion Berger plays the harp.
Okay.
For Mr. Rogers and then Friday. Oh, she plays it for Friday. The Neighborhood of Make-Believe segment is a kinescope of Mr. Rogers about a rummage sale. Okay.
Sounds great.
Why do we let kids watch that? Like an idiotic. The Simpsons. Season 16, episode 15, Future Drama. In the episode, Bart and Lisa stumble into Professor Fink's basement, and he gives them a look into the future as teenagers getting ready for their high school graduation. Mm. Selman wrote
What season was this?
Season 16.
Right. Okay. Damn.
Amy Poehler guest starred, and John DiMaggio, who plays Bender, guest stars with a little Bender Easter egg, I guess. I guess it's not an Easter egg if Bender's in it and talks, but it, you know, whatever. Cameo. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Jerry Springer, 350th episode. This was later than I would have expected. You know what's so funny? Those shows ran every day, but they just fucking looped them. Like, I feel like he just made, like, 100 episodes out the gate, and then they just looped those for like years, because Springer didn't hit episode 350 till 2013.
That can't be
September 6th.
That's nuts. That when they were filming in Connecticut.
Yeah And that was Baby Mamas versus Bad Girls.
I mean, we're in agreement, right? That was professional wrestling of talk show, right?
Yeah.
That was fake as fuck.
So here's an interesting thing. I once went on a few dates with a girl who was a producer for Jerry Springer. And it was when I was in Stanford. And she gave me all the dirt. But the producers, it's not like a prestigious title like you would think. There's like 20 of them. And they are the people that answer the phones. When you call in, when they're like, have a love triangle, call right now. And basically, they are real people and they are really calling in. But she's like, some of them take the bait and some don't, because we kind of guide their answers into like what we're looking for. And if they want to fake it, then that's on them. But they would never be like, tell them to fake it.
Because remember there was like, they did MTV Spring Break, Jerry Springer style.
Yeah.
And there was that huge, like the main one of that whatever year that was. They admitted to faking it. And it was like a big scandal. And then Jerry was like, oh, we vet everything. Like, you know, it came out, they had to like cover their asses. But since they said that, I'm like, yeah, they all fucking fake it. They broke their gag order.
I bet you like that one, because you like that one's like, that's like a pay-per-view. Like you can't come in there and have like not a heavy hitter.
Right.
So I bet you they would fake that one. But the dailies, she said absolutely not. She was like
faithful to the cause.
I was like
that many people are fucking their cousins. Get the fuck out. And agreeing to go on TV and talk. But here's the
thing, dude. That's what I was saying. And she was like, these people are coming for, they have no fucking money. They get a free trip to Stamford, Connecticut. They get a hotel and they get dinner and food. And she's like, and they think of it as like a fucking vacation. Like, these are not people that are like well off. And it's like a free trip. And she's like,
in Stanford.
She was like, we guide their answer. Like, we ask pointed, like guiding questions. Like, well, do you guys get into like a lot of fights? Like, type of thing. And if you were, if they were halfway intelligent, they would pick up and be like, oh yeah, like tons of fights. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, hopefully you don't do that on the air. Monday Night Raw.
Ooh.
February 7th, 2000, out of Dallas, Texas. You got the New Age Outlaws against Edge and Christian to retain the tag team titles. Kurt Angle defeats Mark Henry. The Hollies, Crash and Hardcore, defeat the Acolytes in a hardcore tag team match. Dude, this is the most stacked card of all time.
I was going to say.
This is nuts. This is nuts. Jericho defeats Viscera. the legendary WrestleMania 2000 character Viscera by DQ to retain the Intercontinental Championship.
My almost perfect Royal Rumble with Big Vis, like, still haunts me to this day. To this day. And it's Buzz and Paul. It ruined my fucking life with that.
That would piss me off so bad. Jacqueline defeated Luna for the WWF Women's Championship. The Dudley Boys defeated D'Lo Brown and the Godfather. I love that it says, with ho. With ho. Just one ho.
Dude, I sent you that picture in the group chat. It was a Facebook memory from like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Paul saying, could be ho. Because we were playing WrestleMania 2000 and Godfather's theme song came on. And my brother was like, oh, thank God it's Godfather. And Paul's like, nah, it could be ho. And my brother laughed for like 5 hours. I think it was ho. Like, ended up coming out. Didn't even give her a name. Just ho. Could be ho.
That's nuts, dude. Holy shit. Then the main event. Dude, look, this is fucking psychotic. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, Triple H, and X-Pac with Eddie Guerrero, Stephanie, and Tori in their corner defeated Cactus Jack, Rikishi Fatu, The Rock, and Too Cool in a 10-man tag team match.
This is just Monday Night Raw.
That's Monday Night Raw.
That's crazy. We had it good.
We really did have it fucking good. Doesn't get better than that. That's fucking nuts. What a good episode. 350. What is this? Oh, you know what show had 350 episodes? I didn't write it down, though. Because it just like melted my brain remembering this. Fucking Mr. Wizard. Do you remember that fucking guy?
Of course I remember Mr. Wizard, dude. Are you kidding me? Holy shit.
Did you realize that he was a fucking, like, his main show was on in, like, the 60s?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I never knew that. I just remember the modern one of the 80s.
Dude, he dressed like every pedophile on a sitcom, you know, where they, like, warn you about talking to stranger, you know, stranger danger.
Yeah.
He always had the red sweater with the collar coming out underneath.
Wait. He's so weird. Oh, dude, remember Beakman's World too?
Oh, dude, Beakman ripped a phone book in half with his bare hands, and he claimed it was because he was just wiggling. It was a fucking for those that don't know, the phone books were so thick. And I remember this episode because he was like, one of the characters on it was like, it's impossible. And he's like, bullshit. And he ripped it with his bare hands. And he claimed all you have to do is like wave the pages together a couple times and then tear down. It's not a thing. It's fucking impossible. Look at this guy. That's fucking liar.
Beakman in 2014.
Full of shit. Can you Google that? I'll Google Beakman ripping a phone.
And remember he had like a rat? Beakman was by his Rablat Lester.
Wait, Lester's the one that called that said he couldn't rip it.
Lester in the pilot episode was a puppet, but in every subsequent episode he was simply a clueless and crude man in a tattered rat suit. That's fucking nuts.
Oh, yo, dude, here he is. The fucking man in the rat suit trying to rip the phone book. Holy shit.
Get the fuck out of here.
Holy shit.
Oh, wait. Oh, is it coming up?
This is incredible. Is this our main episode?
Yeah. No, so, okay. So, fun fact. I can't tell everyone. This is why that secret bit came out, because I had all this shit and I was like,
yeah, I like it. But even more so, I just sent you Beekman's World with the rat ripping a phone book.
Well, also, can we just take a quick second to talk about Chud for a second? Do you have a lot to say about Chud?
I have a decent amount. I think Chud's pretty great, to be honest with you.
Oh, man. We are on different wavelengths. Okay.
You don't like Chud?
I did not. I always thought I liked Chud until today.
Nah, I love Chud. Dude, what a stacked cast.
The cast is great. They don't fucking do anything. There's no Chuds to be seen. What is happening? Wait, can you hear this?
Yes.
Oh, I can't hear it.
Wait a minute. What are you doing? Well, you said to use your bare hands. This is my bear and these are his hands. Not your bare hands. Your bare hands. Okay, I took a shot. Thanks, Bruno. Scram. All right. Here goes. It's too thick, Lester. No can do. Oh, yes can do. Now, I place said hands this way. And I bend it thus. And...
Dude, come on.
Dude, this is such a core memory. I'm honestly like, I feel like I need to go lie down. It takes a little virility.
That honestly pisses me off. That's bullshit. That is bullshit. All right.
Yeah, I tried it immediately after and then got yelled at by my dad.
Well, that's fucking nuts. So anyway, Beekman's World. Also, I saw that you posted that creepy Alice in Wonderland, that live action one.
Yes.
Remember that very fondly. Remember that. Well, not so fondly, but like I remember it
very vividly. Yeah.
Do you remember that Winnie the Pooh that was live action and they were just in like giant suits?
I don't think I do.
Oh, it was so weird. Like they're in like furry suits.
Is Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah. Yeah. It was called Welcome to Pooh Corner. It was so fucking weird. They were like, why not just do the fucking cartoon? I was so confused by it.
Oh yeah, I do remember this. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it had a great intro. Great intro. All right.
Holy shit.
Unsolved Mysteries, episode 350, aired June 12th, 2002. Wanted, Eric Rudolph. Attempted murder, murder, and terrorism. Holy shit. Good God. That was their main one. And then Bruce Kelly, a repeat from 1993, and Chad Moore, a repeat from 1991. Another show that just got away with murder by just like, no pun intended, by just like replaying old episodes.
Yeah, well, that one at least is justified because it's still unsolved. Be like, hey, remember this guy? He's still out there being a piece of shit.
But didn't they sometimes like Dallas? Episode 350 was directed by Larry Hagman. It's called
Roommate.
What's that?
My college roommate sleeps. Biggest Dallas fan of all time. Dude, he had the DVD box set. It's true. He was always watching
Dallas. This is upsetting. I do not like that. It's not such a fucking weird show. You know what was crazy? This aired in 1991. I did not realize Dallas ran into like when we were children.
Yeah.
I thought it ended in the 80s, but that's crazy. John Ross,
and Christopher are enjoying watching the joke that is James and Michelle's marriage when Liz catches Cliff with another woman. She realizes that there's no hope to salvage their engagement. Carter learns that Cliff was the one that murdered Johnny.
Bobby, I mean, it's a soap opera, right?
Yeah. Bobby decides to give up looking for Hillary and instead devote his time to being a good father to Christopher. I don't know what that implies, but like, it sounds like his wife was missing and he's like, oh, well, the boy needs a son.
What are we watching, Dallas?
The Ewing men.
Dallas run through.
Hey, wait, guess what? This is the most thrilling part. The Ewing men participate in a cattle drive. JR meets a woman who claims to be James's wife and that he is the father of her son. Oh, that's a good cliffhanger.
This is all one episode?
This is one episode of Dallas. What a
fucking headache. That's pure chaos. So much happening.
10 different fucking plots. And that's all I got. That's all I got for that. So we can go talk about Chud now. But happy 350 episodes. And thank you all to listening and watching live episode watch-alongs with us and coming to our live shows and all the support you've given us over the years.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you all. Now let's fucking get into the fucking nitty gritty here. Chud. A movie that I was always like, I love Chud. Chud is a great bit when you're talking to people that don't like horror movies. Be like, oh, have you ever seen Chud? Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers?
I mean, it's the greatest acronym of all time.
It really is. And then I always followed up by being like, oh, maybe you saw the sequel, Bud the Chud. Chud 2, Bud the Chud. And they're like, no, what? No. And then
I've seen Bud the Chud, by the way.
Bud the Chud's plot, I've never seen it either. Bud the Chud's plot is fucking awesome. Bud the Chud's plot is, wait, can I find just like the quick synopsis? Hang on, I'm going to find the quick synopsis because that was what I read the other night. And I was like, that's the fucking greatest thing I've ever heard. But basically, here, I'll find it. A military experiment to create a race of super warriors goes awry and legions of murderous zombies are unleashed upon a suburban neighborhood. Nice. So basically, after the Chud incident, they're like, hey, you know what? These guys would make great military members. They're weapons. So they give this guy Bud the blood of a Chud. And Bud the Chud is born. And then chaos ensues.
I gotta be honest with you, man. The older I get, the more realistic that actually sounds. Like, it could be passable as something that we would try.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And you know what? Can I say something? Honestly, my issue with Chud is that Chud's biggest villain in this is the government. And
it is.
And it makes perfect, like, that sounds exactly like something that would happen and the way it would be handled. And
That's why I love it. That's not a problem with it.
See, no,
I
want it silly.
Sending armed for, Sean, are you insinuating Chud is not silly? Cannibalistic human underground. Dude, come on. Dude, they send armed forces into sewers with flamethrowers, and they acknowledge the fact that how idiotic that is to send them down there.
Listen, it's just not, I don't know. The main villain turns out to be the National, the Nuclear Regulatory Committee, NERC. That's nuts. That's fucking nuts that they're the villain.
That guy's a great villain.
You're supposed to have 100 monsters in the sewer that are villains, and you only see them in the last 20 minutes.
When you see them, they look fantastic.
Well, worth the wait, but like, give me more. Dude, and then there's like three different plot lines. It's cutting constantly.
It's all great. Dude, it's all great. This is not hyperbole. It has one of my favorite scenes. Actually, dude, fuck, we should have got Paul to like call in. It has one of our favorite scenes. Like, we saw this in college together and like stood up clapping and talked about it for
which days. Scene?
It's when Daniel Stern goes to make a phone call and he's being tailed by the government patsy. Dude. And the guy hangs up the payphone and then swallows Daniel Stern's quarter so he can't make another call. It's the most diabolical shit I've ever seen.
That guy rocks. That weird villain that just follows him around.
Puts padlocks on sewers.
Literally, the only reason you have him is to do that in the movie. He does the quarter scene, he disappears, and then shows back up to padlock him into the sewer.
Dude, walking up, because like, I know there's people listening that don't know what payphones are, but you used to have to insert a quarter until they raised it to 2 quarters, which is bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Being furious about that. I was, but really you had to put mad. A quarter in, and before, like, if you hung up fast enough, the quarter would come out so you could make another call. You
know? Yeah, there was a trick. Yeah.
But also, like, if you didn't hang up, then you lost your quarter and you're shit out of luck. And that, this was a problem back then. So having a man walk up to you and disconnecting your phone call and the quarter coming out and then having that, like, he is an inch away from Daniel Stern's face and he's making direct eye contact. He inserts a quarter, like that very quarter, into his mouth and swallows it while not breaking eye contact. That's honestly a top 10 diabolical move in any movie, in any movie.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know what else? There is a scene in this, speaking of payphones, there's another payphone scene in this. That was the scariest part of this movie was that grandfather walking around the fucking Bronx of New York in the 80s with a child at like midnight and trying to call somebody by payphone to be like, I'm fucking lost. I was like, this is, can't even fucking imagine that. New York City in the fucking 80s.
Do you remember the opening sequence of this movie? It's the most realistic depiction of New York City I think I might have ever seen. It's like, oh yeah, like this is what I remember.
Yeah.
It's either always too like over the top like trauma or it's like glamorized.
Yeah.
The beginning of this movie, it just looks like shit. Like, yeah. I remember
that's
this.
New York City. That's New York City. Yeah, no, could you imagine getting lost in New York City midnight? You're with a child, your grandchild, and no fucking maps on your phone. No phones. No cell phone.
No phone.
No maps. Holy shit. Yeah. That's a fucking... I don't know how we survived as a people, but...
I know. Because like even now, they're like, don't act like a tourist because they'll pick up on that.
Yeah,
if they see you going into a phone booth at midnight, like being frantic, you're fucked, buddy.
Yeah. So that's that. $1.25 million budget. Box office of $4.7 million, released in 1984. Yes. You got John Hurd.
Yep.
Who's great.
Mr. McAllister.
Yeah.
He is great.
He's so good. You got Daniel Stern. Very young.
Yes.
Very young.
Two Home Alone alumni.
You might know him from City Slickers.
Bushwhacked.
Damn, Bushwhack fucking rocks. We brought that up on the show.
Bushwhack is awesome. And John Polito is in this movie as well, who, of course, is the man with the mustache chasing Daniel Stern and Bushwhacked and gets peed on.
Oh, that's him?
Off the mountain. Yeah, it's him. Dude, yeah.
There's an... Oh, yeah, John. Oh, yeah.
He's a newscaster in this.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. And then Christopher Curry's in this, too, who also has done other things with him. I think he might be in fucking Bushwhacked also. He's in fucking Bushwhacked. He's a trooper in Bushwhacked.
Christopher Curry is?
Yeah. Stern just brought all the boys with him.
Brought Home Alone and Bushwhacked. Yeah. Put his people on.
Bringing you to the top with me, boys. I fucking love that. That's so fucking funny. Daniel Stern is fucking great. This is a fucking weird role to see him in, though. Like, when you know him currently.
Because he's so goofy in his most famous roles.
Yeah.
And this, he's like very serious. And he's a maniac.
Do you know his fucking son is a senator?
I did not know that.
Daniel Stern's son is a senator in the state. Oh, to the California State Senate. Wait, is that the same thing? I don't know what the fuck.
You're asking the wrong person, brother.
Fucking government. I have no idea about the government. All right. Well, he's in the California Senate. Yeah, I think that's different. They have their own Senate. Do we have a Senate?
Again, you're asking the wrong person, brother.
You know what? Like,
give a shit about the government.
They tell you to go like vote no matter what and stuff. Yeah, they have a state Senate. Yeah. No one knows who the fuck these people are or what they do. Who the fuck is a state Senate? The fuck out of here. John Goodman for a moment in this movie.
Yep. Very brief moment.
Very, very brief. And who else? Anyone else?
You got Sam McMurray, who's...
Oh, yes.
You know, he's in Christmas Vacation. He's Chevy Chase's friend, but he's Herman Munster. He's Herman Munster in The Munster's Scary Little Christmas.
Yeah, and Roy in Dinosaurs.
Yes, he is.
More importantly, he was also in Stone Cold.
That's right, he was.
As Lance.
That's right.
Man, he's in a ton of fucking movies. He's in The Wizard, one of my favorites. Oh, Raising Arizona. Wait.
Wait, The Wizard, the Nintendo movie?
Yeah.
Kevin Arnold?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
He's in Baby Geniuses.
Oh, that's good. That's... Our boy Bob Clark did that one.
Bob Clark?
Did Black Christmas.
Oh, yes. Oh, he did a ton of TV. Man, I love finding actors like this. Like, I knew Sam McMurray, but like, you don't realize everything he's fucking in. And it's everything ever. All right. Anyone else you want to?
Frankie Faison. He's Irvin Burrell in The Wire. He's in Silence of the Lambs, too.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Anyone else?
That's pretty much it. Kim Grease, she's a Connecticut native. She's in House Guest with Sinbad.
Oh my God, that's like one of my favorite movies. Underrated, a movie they don't talk about for Christmas movies. It is a great Christmas movie. Put it on this All year. Right.
All right.
Put it on. It's A+.
Yeah, you can have a Sinbad Christmas double feature. Put that and then Jingle All the Way on.
Get it.
Call it a day.
Forget about it. Sinbad rocked, man. I don't know what happened. Why he got kicked the fuck out of Hollywood, but that man moved me. I wouldn't fucking go to school like reciting his specials, like his bits to kids in school.
I saw him open for Prince. He was opening at Madison Square Garden. It's incredible.
You know what? You know who else is in this? Patricia Richardson from.
She is very briefly. Home Improvement. Home Alone or Home Improvement. Yeah.
This is a crazy cast. They just got a bunch of people.
I'll just talk about the cast for the entire time.
Well, we already talked about other shows for 30 minutes.
For 40 minutes.
all right. So we did that. We hit the dates. Okay. And then that's it. So we already kind of highlighted our thoughts on it. Joe's in love with it. Joe gave it 5 stars, which is fucking psychotic. But
did I give it 5?
No, I'm just saying that. I'm just trying to piss you off.
I mean, I would believe it. It's a masterpiece.
No, it's not.
4 stars. Joe, 4 stars.
Joe, it's a fucking mess, too. It's like, honestly, it's like not great, dude. Joe, why? Nothing happens. It's 3 different movies.
What do you mean nothing happens?
Nothing happens until the last 30 minutes of this movie.
Nah, dude.
Well, we're about to find out.
Herd gets his wife pregnant. It's good.
There's a fucking storyline that adds nothing.
Dude. This storyline is awesome. John Hurt, they all connect. It's perfect.
It's like
John Hurt takes photos of the homeless. He's lost his way. Daniel Stern has a soup kitchen. He's noticing people aren't coming. They aren't showing up, but they're only the ones that live underground. And then John Hurt bails one of them out of prison for trying to steal a cop's gun, which is fucking insane. Because if you got that phone call, I'd be like, maybe I'm going to pretend I don't know you.
Yeah.
He does. He bails her out. And then he goes down into the sewer and he sees somebody who's infected. And from there, the police get involved. Their paths all mingle. The government gets involved. I fucking love it.
The paths don't mingle. The paths.
They what?
The cop is like ties it together. But fucking what's his name? The Reverend, who's played by Daniel Stern. Reverend saves George, who's played by whatever
John Hurd,
saves him in the last 20 minutes. And John Hurd's like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it." And they can just keep going because they never fucking met, they didn't tie it together.
No, but their paths crossed. That's life, buddy. we're all intermingled,
we're all tied together in this wacky simulation.
Listen, you know what else was refreshing? It starts off with a great,
refreshing,
a good street sweeper scene. like we don't get enough street sweepers in gritty cities anymore.
Wait, I don't
appreciate it.
I don't remember that. Was it literally a man with a broom?
No, it's an actual street sweeper.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like the old school, like
dude on the street. No, I mean the one like now they just blow shit, but that one had like the rotating thing.
Our town still does the fucking rotators.
Dude, I haven't seen a street sweeper in decades.
I see them all the time.
I don't believe that for a second, dude.
No, it's every fucking spring. Every spring they do it.
I don't believe
it. And I get stuck behind them and I lose my fucking mind. Because they take up
with the things that spin?
Yes.
The big brushes?
Yes.
Dude, I don't believe
Joe.
Call me next.
Ancient technology.
I'll leave work. That's why I appreciated it so much. It's like, holy shit. Fucking street sweeper.
I will call you next time. It's going to be in the spring because they got to get the fucking salt off the road.
All right.
My goodness. A good street sweeper scene. Love that, actually. He's been holding out for that sweet street sweeper scene. All right, so Chud opens with a woman and her dog being pulled into a sewer by a monster, and the word Chud comes across the screen.
Already sold, dude. What more can you ask for?
I wrote gotta love it right there.
Okay, good.
I'm on board, right?
Good.
You lose me at the 45-minute mark, but it's okay. We meet, because you're like, wait, no, I don't give a fuck. We meet George. He is a photographer. He was a fashion photographer. Mm-hmm. He got run out of the fashion industry, probably because he published pictures of underground homeless people in a fashion magazine. Which seemed odd. The whole movie, he'll receive calls from some man who's like, who keeps being like, he's a reporter that George shoots for. And he's like, George, I need those fucking pictures. And he actually says, how am I supposed to write an article with no fucking pictures? And you're like, I'm pretty sure usually the articles come first. I think you... What are you going to do? Just describe the fucking pictures?
Well, I did have that same thought, but I think like if the article, cause the article is going to be on the people living underground. So that would be very difficult to write about if you didn't see what they are actually doing underground. You just winging it and then you get the pictures and you're like, oh, that's not what I just wrote about at all.
Yeah, but if you – that's funny. Yeah, but if you don't even know what's in the picture, like you can't write about it even with pictures then. You're going to be like, this is a lady some other guy. So.
Well, I mean, that's true. I would hope there's more collaboration there. But at least you could bullshit it more. Whereas if you make up this like grandiose story and then the pictures come back and it's just people sleeping in, cots, you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah. And the guy refers to them as subterranean bums. Have you ever seen that movie? It's a documentary called Dark Days about the underground homeless people in New York City.
I have not.
It is fucking wild. It's actually pretty depressing, but it's so fascinating because this is real. They live in the tunnels and sewers of New York City. And they have full
blown. Make their own electrical grid.
Yeah, they run electric because all of that shit is just down there for like the construction workers and stuff. So they have access to electricity and some water. Dude, they build full houses.
That's crazy.
In the movie, some guy is putting plaster on the walls. He's plastering like a fucking the seam in the wall. Just talking to the director, being like, "Yeah, this is my house. I work on it every day." You're like, what the fuck is happening? Fucking dude, nuts. But it's
crazy shit underground.
It is pitch black. There's not a single light in there. I mean, they bring in their own lights, but like to get down there, it's just darkness.
It's terrifying.
It's fucking nuts. There's some great scenes.
Have they ever heard of Ratma?
They have not, I don't think. It was wild. And most of it is sad and depressing because a lot of them are obviously on drugs and stuff. But one guy is not on drugs. He quit crack. And he's like, oh, it drives me nuts. All these guys come and knock on my door. Because it's like a neighborhood. He's like, instead of coming and asking for a cup of sugar, they're like, hey, do you have any crack. He's like, guys are banging on my door asking me for crack. And while he's telling this story, he's like painting, and he's painting his front door, and you're like, this is so crazy. And then it pans out and he's writing "no crack" in giant words on his on his door. And he's like, that's why I'm doing this, so they don't go to my door. And I wanted to be like, guy, literally everyone's going to come to your door when you have a sign that says "no crack" on it, because they're like, that guy for sure has crack. No crack, dude. Some guys make more cornbread down there.
Oh, sewer cornbread. That's no disrespect to how people live, but no, not eating no sewer cornbread.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, it's not ideal.
What would you feel more comfortable with? Somebody knocking on your door asking if you had any drugs in your house, or somebody knocking on your door and asking if you had a cup of sugar that they could take to their house? Because honestly, I'd prefer somebody ask me if I had drugs. Asking for a cup of sugar is fucking psychotic.
What? Dude, that was like back in the day. You couldn't just go to the store, man. You had to
go borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Sugar. Yeah, no, that is nuts. Like, but in 2023, if somebody asked me for sugar, wild. I remember, did your mom ever make you go to the neighbor's house and ask for things?
No, God, no. My kidding. Parents have avoided contact with all human beings at all times.
My mom made me go and ask for like butter, I think like a couple times, which is hilarious because she's probably like, they can't say no to a kid. Yeah. They're for sure not going to give me any.
This is a good strategy.
Yeah. So anyway, George has a girlfriend who is a model. That kind of comes into play, I guess. Chris Curry is up next. He plays Captain Bosch, who is part of the NYPD. He is called in to interrogate a homeless woman for theft. So at first I'm like, what a fucking piece of shit. But then it's revealed that this woman, it wasn't theft. She stole an officer's gun. She stole Sam McMurray's gun from him. That's not shoplifting, you know? Like, I was like, fucking theft.
Which is also funny because the entire time the cops are treating it like your initial reaction too.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, way to call that in, McMurray, picking on the homeless for theft, petty theft. Hey, she might have killed somebody.
Stole a firearm. A loaded firearm. Like, it's fucking nuts. Yeah, they're picking on him. They're like, oh, she overpowered you. And then Bosch is like, Bosch is a good guy. Bosch is like, hey, did you give her a phone call? And they're like, who the fuck is this idiot going to call? Only because she won't speak to them. Like, who the fuck is this moron going to call? And he's like, give her her call. And she calls George.
Yes.
Who she knows because she was one of the subterranean bums that he photographed. Anyway, this leads Bosch to go to the Reverend, AJ, the Reverend Shepherd. That is an action movie name for a guy who does not much in this movie. I mean, listen, I know you're going to get upset, but he's not exactly, you know, kicking it. All he does is try to blackmail the government, who's like, we don't give a fuck.
That's true, but he is dressed for the part. He is dressed to be an action star. He has the crop top, the sleeveless arms. I mean, he looks like he's ready to be John Rambo.
Dude, well, that's what I'm saying. The name and the look, you're like, oh, fuck, this guy, I might kill somebody. And then the whole time he's like, oh, gee Williker. Gee golly. His only action is when he shoves a homeless woman. Oh, he does fire a gun at the end. But prior to that, all he does is shove a homeless woman, and it's not a very good shove. While this is all going on, George shows up to help a homeless woman whose name is Mrs. Monroe. And he, like, again, like you're saying, she calls him and is like, yeah, I'm at the police station because I stole a cop's gun. And he shows up, and the cops are like, you don't know her. And he's like, yes, I do. Let's go, honey. Like, stop it. She's literally covered in soot. from living underground. George takes her home, which is underneath the earth. And we meet all the people that Mrs. Monroe is sort of taking care of down there. One of them is very wounded and sick. He's got some bite marks. He's got some shit missing from him. And George takes this opportunity to photograph them.
Take a picture.
I'm a fucking guy.
His leg is severely...
It's fucking almost gone. It's hanging on by a thread.
And simultaneously,
No, you go.
Back to the soup kitchen, the police officer is talking with Daniel Stern's character, and Daniel Stern's saying that all the underground people are disappearing and he hasn't seen them in weeks. And I love this part because the cop's initial reaction, because these are people, Daniel Stern is these are human beings. We should be concerned. Just because they choose to live underground doesn't make them any lesser. And the cop's kind of being like, I don't know, man. Maybe they just went further underground and they'll come back in a couple weeks. And he's like, well, all of them disappeared except for this one guy. And the one guy that's sitting at that table is the most psychotic. I would not approach that guy to get any information on anything. If I was that cop, I'd just be like, you know what? I'll round up the crew and I'll start investigating. I'm not talking to that guy. But they do go and talk to him and he is completely psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, honestly, what the Reverend says is even crazier, because the Reverend's like, hey, the EPA does a probe in the sewers, and it makes all the people jumpy because they're wearing their spacesuit, and it usually lasts about a week. And the fucking cop is like, yeah, I know about that. And he's like, this one's been going on for fucking weeks. And the cop's like, what the fuck? Reverend reveals that he did call the EPA and they were like, yeah, we're not probing anymore. That only lasted a week. So the cop's like, all right, take me down to the sewers and let me see what's up. So he takes him down there. Reverend's just been stealing shit from the EPA that they left. Yeah. That they left down
there. Geiger counters.
He's got a collection of shit. You find a fucking Geiger counter, just turn it on. It goes crazy. The amount of times they're exposed to radiation in this movie and do not give a fuck is insane. My favorite part is when the Rev and George find the nuclear waste. They're in the room with it and they just stand there and talk. They're not reacting. So no one's reacting. They're just constantly like, well, that was wild. The Geiger counter is screaming at us.
To be fair, if I was in my 20s and there was just green waste,
Joe,
I wouldn't. Joe. Probably not. Probably.
When was Chernobyl? When was Chernobyl?
86.
Oh, this was before Chernobyl? All right. You know what? I might give him a pass.
I'm just saying, if we were at a party,
John, no,
and there's a barrel full of green waste,
dude, you know what?
Probably would not leave.
What's upsetting about that is it's true. That is absolutely.
I know we would upsetting. Get someone to drink it at some point, or at least dip a body part into it.
Yeah, and there'd be me who was don't touch it. It would be you. Blacked out. People being like, oh, Grove Joe, touch the waste. And I'd be like, do not do that. Don't do that, Joe. And you'd be like, fine.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
But I would still be there. I wouldn't leave.
Your conscience would be clear because you technically told me no. Yeah. But you knew it was going to happen anyways. Yeah.
And I had to stay and watch. So anyway, so the Geiger counter, and then they hear a giant roar at the end of the tunnel that they're also
Dude, I mean, at that point, you would be like, we got to shut these sewers down immediately.
Yes, you absolutely would. And back on the surface, George finds out his girlfriend is pregnant. And that the guy he works for is still furious and calling him every scene to be like, where's my pictures? We go outside to a man and a child walking around New York City. We talked about that. That was the older guy. But what we didn't talk about is while they're in that phone booth, a chud comes out of the sewer and kills that man.
And the daughter or the granddaughter is petrified.
He leaves her alive, and then she goes to the police and tells the police that she saw a monster. And the police...
Dude, McMurray, McMurray is like mocking her to her face.
He is five feet away from her.
She is like, her acting's great because she's like visibly shaken, like traumatized from seeing her grandfather murdered.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, you fucking lying idiot. Of course it wasn't a monster.
He is 5 feet behind her. As Joe said, he is like, this fucking bozo's talking about monsters. Moron.
An 8-year-old girl.
Dumb idiot. Good luck talking to her. She doesn't know shit. And then, like, the cop, what's the cop's name again?
Bosch.
Bosch is like, how do we know that's not real? So I'm like, oh man, Bosch is fully invested into this monster thing. But then later he's like, I don't know about this monster thing. So it comes in waves, I think.
No, I think they depict him as just being like an actual good cop.
Yeah.
Like, just by the books, like wants to believe people and help people, whereas everyone else just already has their opinion set.
Yeah, well, he gets on the phone and he's like, get every cop down here to the fucking Bronx. We're taking these monsters down. And then whoever he's talking to, I don't even know. He's like, you get the fucking Nuclear Regulatory Committee on the phone right now. You tell them to get their asses down here. And you're like, that's fucking nuts. And then it happens.
Dude, the end of the Cold War was so nuts because that's all that was on people's mind. Like the fact that you would think NYPD would just call a suit from the nuclear committee to come down.
Also, like,
talk about what's going on.
NERC, in my day job, I have to deal with like NERC situations and like their procedures and stuff. They're just a committee.
Right.
Just makes rules. the guy from NERC is a Bond villain.
He carries weapons on him.
Weapons and files that no one's supposed to see. And then he's like, hey, why are you reading my files?
That is actually like one of the funniest tropes to be like, this is top. So why are you carrying that around that's like easily accessible that anyone could just like yank or get, you know, see?
Leaves it on the table and three cops read it and are like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, hey, what the fuck are you doing reading my
that top was confidential files?
It's fucking crazy. Why would you even bring them to the meeting that you are denying all plausibility to?
That's what I'm saying. It's the greatest trope for nuclear shit. Bringing stuff that completely incriminates you and everyone else involved to a meeting where you're just being like, I don't know what you're talking about. And by the way, what's those papers you got there?
By the way, the funniest part of this entire fucking movie is the fact that CHUD actually stands for Contamination Hazard Urban Disposal. But NERC, the villain of NERC, is like, when they find the file that says CHUD, they're like, what the fuck is CHUD? He's like, I don't know, cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers? And they're like, oh shit. And at the end, they even acknowledge
that. They're like, oh yeah, cannibalistic humanoid. Call him out on
that was nuts. What's his name says that exactly. He's like, cannibalistic humanoid my ass. No, that is real. That is fucking real. And should be very concerning. It's so nuts.
He's already seen the actual chut. Like, he's seen what happened to these people. Like, with his own eyes, and it's still that's his takeaway. Be like, you were full of shit with that acronym.
Also, using that to divert attention from the actual thing that was going on, but you're just diverting it to the other problem that you don't want people to know about. Like, I feel like that's like the P. Tier Griffin.
Yeah.
Where he's like, cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. And he's like, oh, fuck. I just revealed the other thing.
We do have those down there, too. Which would honestly be the bigger problem, right?
Yes, of course. Monsters that are
reproducing. Urban disposal is bad. Like, you're going to get some lawsuits, but there's fucking monsters down there.
Monsters that they're, like, going to try to asphyxiate by, like, filling up the streets with the sewers with gas. Yeah. Most dangerous thing I've ever heard. Oh my god. Anyway, we just revealed the
Which again, like, I love that because I'm like, that is so stupid. I can honestly see the government be like, well, you know, we can't let this get out naturally. That there's chuds under there. Let's fill New York City with poisonous gas.
That's great. So Bosch, who's about to go meet with federal employees, is like, you know who needs to come with me to this? The guy that runs the homeless soup kitchen.
Which Daniel Stern is dressed like he has been the entire day. He would not be allowed in that room. They would not let
him. No, of course not. And he must stink because he is covered in grease and he's wearing the, like, the typical line kick. The line cook outfit that, like, you just see in, like, old movies where they're just like the white t-shirt with just stains all over. And it's just like, I'm just fucking flipping burgers over here, man. I'm just making food. But he brings the Reverend, who immediately he gets into the meeting and is like, you're covering everything up. And the government's like, no, we're not. Like, we're not. And then he holds him hostage because he's like, well, it'd be a real shame if the newspaper got these photographs. And they're like, what photos? And he's like, well, I'm not going to show them to you. And then he goes, well, maybe I'll show you one. Then he hands them all three of them. Yeah. Immediately. Which they should have just torn up and thrown out. Been like, well, there you go. That's done. And at first they're like, oh, shit, like, this guy's got us. But then he just goes overboard again and is like, so you'd fucking tell me everything. And he's like, no. And Daniel Stern's like, fine, and leaves. It's so amazing. It's so amazing. Tell me about the damn disappearances and the monsters. Oh, and then Daniel Stern goes, I want to know so I can help. And Daniel Stern's actually, like, a solid actor in this. Like, he's trying his hardest. He's trying to get into Hollywood. And the NERC guy goes, we don't want your help. Which is the funniest answer to that of all time. Like, it's so accurate. Like,
that whole sequence.
You work in a soup kitchen.
Aside from them letting him into that place, yeah, into that room in the first place, it's very realistic. Because, like you said, the guy's answer is just like, yeah, no, yeah. And Daniel Stern is pleading his hardest, pleading to
and his good. Emotions change. He's like angry. He's angry at first. And then he goes to like, I just want to help. Like, this is the only reason I'm behaving like this. And they're like, yeah, no, we don't give a fuck. And then he gets angry again. He tries everything he can. And when he storms out, that's when the cops get to see the folders with Chud on it. And they're like, you better tell us what Chud stands for. And then he also gets a call at the exact same time, the NERC guy. And he's like, two gas guys found a cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller. It's dead. So they go, they get to see a Chud.
Yes.
And it's dead. Got asphyxiated because there was a gas leak.
And NERC guy claims it's the only one in existence. It's impossible to have more.
Which is bizarre. He is the shittiest guy at cover-ups of all time. I mean, fucking terrible at it. We go back to the other storyline of George, the photographer, who is now being followed by a freelance reporter who is so mad at him, furious at him. Now, this isn't the reporter on the phone, is it?
That is actually a good question.
I don't think it is. It should be, because we've lost track of that guy at this point. It should be, but this guy is asking him like he's never talked to this guy before. No, it's not, because when George talks to him, he's like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, because the guy that George, that's calling George, his name's Derek, because he leaves it on the voicemail.
That's right. So this other guy's following him around.
Murphy, right?
Yeah. And he's like, he like approaches George while George is in the park having a picnic. And he's like, hey, Buster, you're the guy that's hanging out in the fucking sewers taking pictures of people. I want the fucking story. And George is like, who the fuck are you? And what is this? And he's like, oh, you think you're such a piece of shit taking pictures of them. But then wants the pictures for himself. And George is just kind of like, all right, man, like, I'll take fucking pictures for you. I think I'll bring you down there. It's a bizarre storyline.
Also, I just have to share this real quick. I changed my whole setup. Yeah. Because behind me is my furnace and stuff. So the mic's facing a different way. I'm crammed into the corner to try and minimize additional noise.
Sure.
And I just realized I left my phone right next to the microphone the entire time. And I've been getting messages nonstop. So...
It's not picking up on this one, so maybe I can use the video recording if it's bad.
Okay. Yeah, I did put through all that effort just to...
Well, we'll give it a fucking whirl. So, Georgie... No, we're not with Georgie.
The reporter was with him.
Yeah, the cops took him... Oh, yeah. So, George goes back to his apartment... Realizes the photos he took in the sewers are missing. And he's like, that piece of shit reporter stole them from me. So he confronts a reporter. And the reporter's like, the cops took them. So let's go to the sewer to get them back. And George is like, that sounds like a good idea. And then while this is going on, Bosch has decided to send in the police with flamethrowers to go looking for more chuds.
Into the sewer.
Because he says when there's smoke, there's fire.
That would blow Manhattan off the map. Sewer gas and flamethrowers. Like when you change your toilet, you're supposed to stuff stuff into the
pipe. You are.
Sewer gas doesn't come up.
And they're going down there because the NERC guy was like, there's nothing down there. And Bosch was like, you're full of shit.
Have you ever seen, there's a video out there, some guy throws an M80, like he pulls off a sewer cover and throws an M80 down there and then puts the cover back on, and it blows up like the entire block. Insane.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. His big stupid face, like he was so shocked when that happened. What'd you think, buddy?
Chuds would just never make it. Chuds would just die instantly. Asphyxiated by gas, or they would die when they smelt fresh air. That would have been my M. Night Shyamalan.
Fresh air would probably, yeah. I like that.
They come up from, they force them out with the gas, and everyone's like, no, they're gonna kill us all, but they just die on fresh air.
Yeah,
they've just been smelling shit fumes. So, Bosch and the NERC guy are just watching this live. Like through video cameras. And they're like, there's nothing down there. But a chud takes out the whole team on film. And the NERC guy honestly is awesome. The NERC guy is the buzz of this movie because they just keep finding shit. And the NERC guy's like, prove it. Like, like, so we just saw it. We have video. We have video of a chud killing our whole team. And he's like, I don't know. I don't really know if that's what that is. You're like, what the fuck? Would have been the most frustrating thing to ever deal with. Every time something happens, he's like, well, who knows? Who can say? Yeah. We find a file about
undisputed fact. Like, how do you argue with somebody like that? Like, you can't prove them wrong because they're just set in their way.
It's fucking genius. And finally, politicians realize that. And now that's all they do is like, well.
Presenting them with photographic evidence.
Yeah. You just go, no, it's not true.
I really think you're wrong.
I don't think that's real. You can't argue with that.
That. It's foolproof. Well, all right.
They're like, no, it's real. And you're like, oh, I don't think that is.
Prove it.
I've never seen it.
I didn't see you take that picture. It's fucking, it's actually like, we're too far gone. You can't prove anything anymore.
Everyone figured out that fucking second grade mentality. Everyone just re-remembered it. We're like, well, it's the fucking greatest thing to do.
Actually psychotic.
It's fucking not taking responsibility for anything. Man, I love that shit. And that's what this nerd guy's doing. And it's actually fucking great because literally every time he's just like, oh, well. I don't know about it. So then they have a meeting to figure out what to do with the chuds, which is also hilarious because you have the good cop. The good cop, Bosch, is so weird because, like, sometimes he's, like, so good and some other times he's just, like, not that great. And this is one of the scenes where they're like, we got to do something about the chuds. And they're all standing around and basically they're like, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll just figure it out when it happens. And the nerd guy's like, let's fill up the sewers with gas, which I understand is nuts. But, like, also... it's fucking monsters, dog. Like, do that. Like, do something.
I guess. I mean, they are claiming one chud died due to gas exposure.
Yeah. And you saw that it could walk through fire.
That's also true.
Which I don't understand.
This movie fucking rocks.
This movie makes no fucking sense. And by the way, it doesn't, because we haven't seen a fucking chud to save our life. We saw one at the phone booth. We
saw the corpse.
Yeah, we saw a corpse in a reflection.
It's good.
Good lordy. And we're getting to the end here. So the cop is like, goes to the Reverend and he's like, listen, they're going to fill all the sewers up with gas. The one thing the cop points out that I loved was he was like, this is going to force the chuds on land. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a fucking good point. I like that. It's not going to kill them. They're just going to run out of there like rats.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Maybe we do fill the sewers with gas and get rid of this rat problem while we're at it. You know what? Give that nerd guy a fucking medal. The guy, guy almost cleaned up New York City for the first time in fucking a century.
I don't know, dude. The rats are out and about already.
That's true.
They're not even bothering underground. Dude, I never seen rats that big in my life as I am now.
The ones in New York City?
Yeah.
Dude, you're fucking monsters.
They're like raccoon size.
Yeah, it's fucking horrifying.
Yeah. Why is that happening?
They're so fucking gross. And they just like run on people's feet now. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, they don't give a shit.
It's wild. Okay. Anyway, cop goes to Reverend. He's like, listen, they're going to fill it up with gas. And Reverend's like, oh shit. There's a lot of people down there. We should probably try and get them out of there. Meanwhile, in the sewers, we got the journalist and the photographer, George. George does not have a camera, though, so I'm not sure what they're doing. And the reporter gets eaten 3 seconds into being in the sewers.
He's gone.
He just gets sucked into a little tube. He's done. And then George is just wandering around for the remainder of the movie, lost in a sewer.
Yes.
Which is, and
his girlfriend, Lauren, gets attacked in her apartment.
By chuds?
Blood.
Oh, no. Wait. That wasn't even the attack.
Showering.
Yeah.
She's showering and blood comes out of the drain.
Yeah. Like,
all over her face, all over her body. And yeah. She's screaming. And then the very next scene, she's just calmly like drying her hair and getting dressed. You would be so disgusted and mortified. You're not getting changed. You're not getting ready to do it. Your plans are canceled for the rest of that day.
dude, the rest of the fucking week, you just
possibly life, yeah.
But your life, maybe, yeah. Because she would Joe explained it, but she there's a clog in the tub, so she shoves a clothes hanger in it to like get the clog out, and just covered in fucking blood. Just blood sprays all over her. And in that next scene, she's just like, she sits on the couch, the bed, and you're like, oh, maybe she is upset. And then she gets up and just starts like decorating flowers, like moving flowers around. And you're like, what the fuck?
She just gives this puzzled look, just like, oh, that was weird. Also, that she had so much honor, it would have taken her hours.
Her fucking eyes, like directly into her fucking eyeballs. Go to a hospital at least.
Yeah, dude, hepatitis, that's in that blood coming from the New York City sewer.
Dude. God. Oh, my God. Stern also goes down to the sewers and gets locked in there by that agent. He starts warning all the homeless people that the sky is falling, which, hey, Reverend, they're just homeless. They're not.
Well, no. That guy from the soup kitchen that the policeman talks to at the beginning,
he says that is,
yeah.
So he's unwell. Okay, gotcha.
And like, and they all think that too, that the sky's going to be coming down.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, Reverend gets locked down there. He's wandering around looking for an exit when he stumbles upon a group of chuds performing a sacred ritual. I don't know what they're doing. They're just like, their hands are up. They're hollering.
Just chudding around. Just
chudding it up. It's just the chud pregame. It's what they do before they come and grab your ass. While this is going on, the photographer's girlfriend, this just cuts to 18 different fucking stories. The photographer's pregnant girlfriend goes into, I thought she went underground, but it was just her basement, where she found a dead dog hung up. Mm-hmm. So are chuds in her basement?
Yeah. They're in her apartment, yeah.
But they're just hanging in the basement?
Because remember, they're trying to get that kid too?
Yeah, I know that. Kid. But like, why is there a dead dog in the basement? Like, do they have access to, have they always had access to the house?
Yeah, remember George says that there's a hole in his closet.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's like a direct line.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So their basement isn't really their basement. Their basement's like connected to the sewers.
Entryway to the sewers.
It's a fucking nightmare. But close that off. Fucking nightmare. I mean,
it's definitely a health hazard for sure.
And while this is going on, one thing we didn't know was Detective Bosch's wife has been missing this whole time. And earlier when he's telling the Reverend, when he first talks to the Reverend for the first time, the Reverend's like, hey, man, I've been calling the fucking police station for like 3 weeks and suddenly you show up and have interest. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Yes.
And Bosch is like, well, my wife's missing.
Yes. And Bosch, in like the middle of the movie, when he's dispatching the flamethrowers, he puts a APB on his wife as well.
Yeah. But it's so weird because like you think Stern would be like, you're a fucking asshole. But Daniel Stern is actually like kind to him. He's like, hey man, I'm sorry. But I'd be like, it took your wife going missing to like help these people. Like what the fuck is going on? Like, but he gets a call. They have found his wife dead in the ocean.
Yeah.
But she was the one that got eaten by the chuds.
You see her like bloated, decapitated head. It's pretty gruesome.
Oh, was it just the head?
Maybe
that would make sense. Whole body. That would make sense because they rip people in half. So
yeah.
Well, we finally get a real chud attack here. John Goodman shows up as a cop to a diner, but so do the fucking chuds, and it's a bunch of them, and they fucking destroy the diner, kill everyone inside.
Yeah, it's too bad they didn't have a bigger budget because you don't get to see what they're doing inside. It would have been nice to see.
Yeah.
And then while those chuds are attacking, George's girlfriend gets attacked. They invade her apartment, a few of them. She barricades herself in the room. She pours fucking, like, what do they call it? Like the dark room liquid that you develop photos with. Into the Chud's eyes, blinding him. And she's like, well, thank goodness. And then another Chud just jumps through the fucking wall. Fucking crazy. And then she runs out, grabs one of the decorative swords, which the whole movie distracted.
Dude.
Because I was like, why does this guy have two fucking swords on the wall? They made him living in squalor, but the one thing he had was two very nice decorative swords on the wall. And so she grabs the sword. Chud comes out. And its neck starts stretching. It's insane. It's an insane special effect. It looked so good. But it's literally only used.
So she has a clean shot.
So she can clearly cut his fucking head off. And she is able to escape from there. While that's going on, the entire neighborhood is looking at the crime scene where the cops are investigating the diner, which is now in shambles. The guy from NERC is now commanding the police. He's got all the police and he's like, you're going to do exactly what I fucking say. And the photographer is in the sewer just finding people ripped to shreds. He also finds that guy Victor, who is the homeless guy with the bites in him, finds him again and is like, we got to get out of here. Victor's now partially a Chud.
Yes.
He hasn't fully morphed, but he's close.
Hasn't turned yet. Yes.
He kills him. Mrs. Monroe shows up and is like, you killed my brother, you bitch. Steals his gun again. She's about to shoot him. And Daniel Stern shows up and kind of just like jostles her and she falls over. That's the end of her.
Dude, it is the most half-assed, laziest shove perhaps ever.
Dude, like, it was wild. Like, you couldn't get a stunt person to, like, take the bump for her. Like, what the fuck is going on? So Reverend and George leave. They find all the nuclear waste, and they're just hanging out next to it. They're finding boxes labeled Chud, and they're like, what the fuck's a Chud? Because neither of them were present for that moment. Then they find more ripped up people. And then just like, for some reason, George just starts like rolling all over the ground, which I understand. Like, this is a horrifying thing to walk into. But he's already seen it once.
Right.
And he sees it again and the guy collapses. John Hurt fucking falls, just like rolling around. Daniel Stern's like trying to carry. It's a full, most intensely acted scene of possibly ever for the most insane moment of the movie. And dude, falling into a New York suit, that would override any emotion you had. Yeah, falling on your hands and knees in a New York City suit, you'd be like, your body would just be like, no, we're gonna just muscle through this. We're not putting our hands on that fucking floor. Like, absolutely fucking not. What are we doing here? Anyway, Bosch confronts NERC and it's like, cannibalistic my ass. I know that CHUD stands for Contamination Hazard Urban Disposal. And the NERC guy's like, oh, no.
The only time the NERC guy showed any emotion.
Dude, the CHUD problem is not resolved in this movie. What is resolved is the urban disposal problem and the guy that runs NERC being evil.
The murder of a NERC man.
A NERC agent is killed. And that's what's supposed to satisfy us at the end of this movie. That's nuts, dude. There are monsters in the sewers left unresolved, totally unresolved.
And again, like you said, he's just an agent. So that there is a higher up that they're going to be sending more and more agents out there when that guy doesn't come back.
Fucking nuts. That one blew my mind. That was crazy when he's like, cannibalistic my ass. No. Well, I mean, as you know, my friend, those are real. Those are real. Then there's no my ass. Why are you so mad about that? Wait, like, focus. One problem at a time. Fucking nuts. Thankfully, though, Reverend and George are able to escape the sewers. The Nerk guy, who we thought was disposed of because Bosch punched him, is up. He shoots Bosch, steals a van. Now, this van was part of, like, the whole plan of destroying these chuds. So maybe this was supposed to show us that the chuds are dead. But they were like, these vans were supposed to do something. He explains it in one scene. And I watched it and I was like, this makes no sense. Because he's like, when you're driving the van, they're supposed to explode when you go over the sewer. So don't hit any potholes. And you're like, what the fuck does that mean? I don't even understand what the fuck is it supposed to mean. Anyway, so he tries to run over Rev and George, misses him, turns around, tries to get him again. Reverend shoots him in the chest, kills him, and then the truck hits a manhole and it just fucking explodes, the biggest explosion you've ever seen. And that's how the movie ends.
That's it. That's the end.
Reverend checks on Bosch, who's shot lying in a gutter, and you're like, oh, maybe Bosch will live, but then it kind of plays like, no, Bosch isn't going to survive that gunshot. And his last words are telling Reverend he has a good shot. Good shot, Reverend. George's girlfriend is there, her pregnant girlfriend, which just being exposed to nuclear radiation. Her boyfriend's been hanging out next to fucking nuclear waste, just sitting around, crawling around a sewer, and she fucking hugs him at the end of the movie. Would you rather hug somebody that was exposed to nuclear radiation or hug somebody that was just rolling around the floor of a fucking New York City sewer?
Radiation.
Yeah, 100%.
All day.
I feel like the chances are way less likely that anything will happen with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Fucking nuts. And that is Chud, everybody. What a movie.
4 stars.
It is not a 4-star film. It's not. It's just not. It is.
Come on, what do you give it? You have a Letterboxd rating?
Probably. It's probably high as fuck. Dude, I thought 5 stars. Yeah.
Let's say. 3.5, dude. Come on. Give me shit for 4. You give it 3.5.
Upon
I love this movie. That's how you start your review off. I love this movie. I saw this at a very young age, so it was all very fresh to me. Is the acting bad? Yes, I don't care. This movie is a blast, and you will absolutely have fun watching it. Well, Sean.
I think, listen to me.
Stuff like this is great, and the special effects are surprisingly good.
That's true.
Just watch this and put away the notepad and rating system and just really enjoy it.
Okay, so maybe that's my problem this time.
Yeah, taking the notes. Well, I agree with your 2015 review.
I don't.
Why did we both watch this in 2015?
Hey, Joe, I would have sworn we talked about this fucking movie.
I swear, dude. Because even Tina came home from work while I was watching this, and she was like, didn't we watch this for the show, like the two of us, like a couple years ago? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know why we do it. Creature feature? Could it be?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. That makes sense. We probably talked about it in depth on the creature feature.
The creature feature.
Enjoy episode 350, everybody.
A repeat. A repeat with 40 minutes on other TV shows. None of them horror related. What was I going to say? The creature feature thing was weird. I remember even when we did it, it was weird because we definitely had like conflicting reviews about what a creature feature was.
We did, yeah. Yeah.
So it ended up being like a mix of like monsters and also like slugs and Night of the Lepus.
Yeah. I say, yeah.
That's my favorite thing. Made no sense.
Dude, but that has actually like probably top three moment, favorite moment for the show is when you were asking for the explanation about what a langolier was. And Paul defines what a miniseries was. And your response was just like so blunt. Yeah, man, I know what a fucking miniseries is. I'm asking what a langolier is. I remember that like yesterday.
It's a multi-part. It's like a movie, but broken up into parts.
Yeah, and then after you said that, he says nothing until you started talking again, and then leans into the mic and does what makes the noise that the langoliers make with their mouth, just doing choppy noises. That was his definition for you. Oh, they're just going this the whole time.
Having Paul on the live this weekend was great also.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Guy who says, I hope my work won't be able to get a hold of anything that I'm saying on this. And then says the most insane shit.
Yeah, he was like, we did a script read. We did the Rob Zombie script reads. And he was like, listen, I don't want to say anything crazy on this because like somebody from my office might see it. Immediately just starts saying the most out-of-pocket shit that you were like, we're not asking you to say any of this. You're just willingly yeah. saying this.
Thank God his mic wasn't working.
I know. There was a couple things. Anyway, it was great fun, though. We should do that. I feel like we should do that at least twice a year.
Oh, I agree.
I wish we could do it like three times a year, but I'll take twice a year. I would love to do it like three times. That was so much
together. Watch a movie. Fuck it. It was fun, man.
That's so much fucking fun. Like it unlocked better stories. Like we had a bunch of good stories coming up. That one, I will tell you, we don't list like a single fact. I think the first break, I give out some facts. Oh, yeah. And then after
yeah,
that.
In terms of live show. Yeah, yeah. Sloppy.
And then what? Dude, it just cuts to us and we're like, hey, remember that fucking time? But I will say.
Fun fact. Oh, sorry. You got
it. No, you got
it. It was a fun fact. Sean didn't tell me that the camera was on us when I got there. So I was standing in frame, scratching my nuts for like 5 minutes, and then I realized that the camera was on. I was like, oh fuck, like people could see, and all they could see was my fucking like lower half of my body. And Paul's like, yeah, nobody's probably paying attention. And immediately there's a comment being like, dude, is Joe all right? He's fucking scratching himself.
Okay. To be fair, what Joe's saying is that he didn't know the camera was on him. I have a 70-inch television that we could see us on camera.
No, I knew, on the, air. I knew the camera was on me. I just didn't, like, I could see myself on the TV. I just didn't know other people could see me.
Live and on the air. Yeah, no, it was really fun. What I think I would like to do for the next one, maybe, I don't know, because we were talking about some shit off, I don't know. Some people were like, some people wanted access because they could see us. Because, like, Joan. I don't think I watched a minute of that fucking movie because we were just talking the entire fucking movie and everyone could see us talking and laughing. And they were like, I want to hear that. Like they were like,
yeah.
Just play that audio. So part of me wants to do like an alternate stream, like stream it twice, two different streams, one where you can watch a movie and one where you could listen to us be fucking idiots.
I'm down with it, man.
During the whole movie. And you could choose. We'll just have to, you know, remember that we got hot mics. We got to a point where everyone was so drunk that we were hiding our faces from saying things. And me and Joe were mic'd up with lapel mics. Arguably made it louder because it diffused the fucking sound.
More clear. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good show, though. It was a good show. So if you want to check that out, patreon.com/IHateWhore. If you want to support us, patreon.com/IHateWhore. We should also, I'm terrible at promoting certain things. We have a store where you could buy shit. And now I already forgot the fucking address. It's thehorrorshowstore.com. Thehorrorshowstore.com. You can get merch there. We got all the merch, all the fun merch there. So check that out. Buy some merch if you want. What else is there? Oh, there's something else. I was gonna say. Oh, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. I never do that anymore. If you do, send me an email, Sean@IHateHorror.com, and I'll send you some stickers.
Yeah.
Even if you did one in like the last year or two, when I've not been saying this, send me an email, I'll send you some stickers. So do that. What else is there? Should we go over the schedule for this month?
Please, because I would like to know it myself.
And we're gonna do a quick extra episode after this on Son-in-Law.
Oh hell yeah!
And the last two Rocky movies. Everyone's
giving me a semi. The Pauly Shore says that twice.
He said, "Wait, was it semi or something else?" Yeah, it's semi. Oh,
semi. It's semi.
Dude, yeah. He kept saying it. All right. We have, okay, so December. I was going to go with a snowy themed. I think we're out of Christmas movies.
Okay.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
So I was going to do like winter theme, but I don't know how these are going to hold up. I think some of these are good. I don't know, though. But we do have some good, we got a couple people that donated to a charity thing that I did. So we've got some of those picks also, which I'm excited to do. So I didn't know whether to film in or we should do the snowy weathered ones. 30 Days of Night I have for next week.
That's been pretty requested, actually.
Yes, it has. It has. So I think we should do that. The next two are questionable. And the reviews will lead you to either want to do it so badly or not do it at all. And they are Satan's Blade and Ghost Keeper.
Okay. Don't know.
Both weird little slashers. Snowy themed.
I'm sold.
Okay, we'll do those. So Spookies is going to have to wait. We'll wait till Spookies. Actually, I think we're going to have to wait for everyone. I'm sorry for all the people that donated, because I think we're going to have to get to those in like March. Because you got January is Serial Killer, which we got to choose a topic on. And then February is Found Footage. So then March is going to be the next time. So we'll do them all in March. We'll try to do them in March.
Okay.
Spookies. And then this movie called Sleep Stalker that looks kind of cool.
There's zombie farts in Spookies.
There's a zombie fart?
Yeah.
Shark fart versus zombie fart? And then our live show, 12/23. Make sure you can do that date.
I can.
It's a Saturday. Good. Well, that was quick. 12/23, December, Saturday. Wait, is that a good... Wait, hang on. Should we do Jack Frost or... What was it? Was one we just talked about doing?
Oh, rare exports.
Santa's sleigh.
Oh, Santa's sleigh. I'm voting for Jack Frost.
Yeah, of course it's Jack Frost, right?
Okay.
That deserves a rewatch.
Yeah,
for sure.
Christmas came early. Dude, great one-liners in that. I just streamed Thanksgiving, and a lot of people saw it for the first time.
Oh.
If you had fun with Thanksgiving, you're going to have fun with Jack Frost.
Yes.
A snowman talks just as much shit as a turkey does in Thanksgiving.
Jack Frost is a more polished Thanksgiving.
Well, that's your opinion. Joe.
It's not an opinion. It's just that an objective fact. And by the way, Jack Frost is not that polished, but it's...
We're talking about the Michael Keaton, yes. Jack Frost.
A dead dad that one? Comes back as a snowman. Dude, why would you watch
feel good movie of the year? Get in the holiday spirit.
You know exactly how this ends. Like, you already know the ending. Why would anyone go see that fucking movie? My dad died and turned into a fucking snowman.
And then when it gets warm, he's going to fucking melt.
Fucking melt. It's fucking frosty, except it's your dead dad dying again. Fucking psychotic.
The same people that go to see that dog movie, dude.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. Just
which, by the way, we had so many messages. But I saw opening.
Dude, so many people were like, "I've seen that."
I guarantee that they all own Jack Frost on VHS.
I was first in line. Anyway, so that's going to be December. That'll be fun. 30 Days a Night, Satan's Blade, Ghost Keeper, and Jack Frost.
Perfect.
All right. Well, that's it for this week, everybody. Patreon.com/IHateHorror, IHateHorror.com. Rate, review, subscribe. Email me, Sean@IHateHorror.com. And we're at Instagram @IHateHorror. Joe, where can they find you?
Instagram, Boognish1985.
That's a wrap. Thank you to Joe. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for 350 episodes. Can't thank you enough for that. That's crazy.
Thank you.
So appreciate you all. And that's it for this week. For Joe, this is Sean. Stay weird.
Thank you.
Adios. I dissect.